Okay. At the end of class, I gave whatever little of a tease of tonight's topic. Here's a list of the key themes that we considered from chapters 3 through 5 as the children of Israel crossed the river. We talked about the crossing and to some extent the memorializing of that crossing and how God wanted them to remember, what he wanted them to remember from that and what they would use to remember that. And then in chapter 5, we have the very important step of them being circumcised as a nation in preparation for going into the land of Canaan to conquer the land. So that's all we'll say in way of review. I said that tonight we would talk about one particular thing that really is in many ways central to what's going on in chapter 3 in particular. It is probably in our culture, when you say the Ark of the Covenant, many people think of Harrison Ford and whatever year they made this movie. And the Ark of the Covenant has certainly been the subject of a lot of speculation, a lot of fascination. There's a lot of intrigue that surrounds the Ark. Some of that is probably a function of the things we don't know about it. Some of it could be a function of the things we do know about it. But it's being the subject of a major motion picture, I'm sure, has only added to the intrigue. So, and then, over the years, there have been fraudulent claims of its discovery that I'm not going to give any treatment to tonight. But there are some that really want to find the Ark. I think completely misses the point of why the Ark was constructed, as I hope will be made clear tonight. So, I thought we would kind of go off. Take a side trip here. Maybe this is a little Route 66 Bible study instead of, Sunday we'll get back on the highway and go back through the text of Joshua. So let's talk about the Ark of the Covenant tonight and its importance in the book of Joshua and its importance in the Bible, okay? Let me give you a little bit of a challenge there. Let's start out by thinking about the different names by which this ark is known. I certainly don't have a comprehensive list staring me in the face here. I wouldn't ask you in the spur of the moment to come up with a comprehensive list, but why don't you take a couple of minutes just in the book of Joshua. Now, if you have a search function on your Bible app, that would be useful here in a pinch, but maybe you already can think of some different names or titles for the Ark of the Covenant, just by way of introduction as we begin to talk about this. So take a couple of minutes and see what you can find. Joshua chapters 3 and 4 has a few of them to give you a little bit of a hint as where maybe you can turn. Joshua 6, of course, the Ark is there. We looked Sunday at Joshua 3. The Ark is constructed in Exodus 25, and it features in a number of spots throughout the Old Testament. There are actually several places, several Bible stories in which the Ark of the Covenant plays a very important role. So we know what one of the names would be, simply the Ark of the Covenant. Okay? Anybody, Angie, do you find one already?
The Ark of the Lord.
And sometimes a different name is used for Lord. I know that in the New American Standard because Yahweh, if Lord is used for the name Yahweh, then Lord has the small cap feature that users of the New American Standard are familiar with. So sometimes it's the Ark of Yahweh, sometimes it's the Ark of the Lord, probably Adonai. I haven't checked that. Joshua 3, verse 13 uses Lord twice, and I think it's two different words there. You can check me out on that. What are some other... Sharon?
Ark of the Testimony.
The Ark of the Testimony. Yeah, that... Did you have a passage that that went with?
I'm sorry.
Did you, was there a particular passage where you found that?
Hang on, I went off my phone.
Oh, sorry.
It's in Joshua 4.
Okay.
16.
Joshua 4, verse 16, the Ark of the Testimony. Yeah. Ark of the Testimony is used a lot in the book of, in Exodus 25. That shouldn't be surprising to us because where are the children of Israel? In Exodus 25, what mountain? Mount Sinai. They receive the tablets, and there's the instruction to place the tablets in the ark. Okay. There are variations on Ark of the Covenant. There's the Ark of the Lord. There's the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. Any others you're finding in Joshua 3 and 4? Lisa, this is better than sitting and listening to me lecture, right? Kim?
Well, there's one that goes into more detail. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth.
Yeah. Chapter 3, verse 11. I assume you're... The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth. How'd you like to paint that sign? The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth. That's like an entire verse almost to memorize. Similarly, verse 13 of that text, the Ark of the Lord of all the earth. Very similar to that. Any others? Probably getting close to exhausting the list that's there in Joshua. Just the ark? And so compelling was this divinely ordained object that all you had to do was say, I'm sure, the ark. And there's everything that word would have conveyed. Of course, ark is that it's not the first time in the Bible ark is used, right? Genesis 6. So there's just that idea of ark, or I forget the literal meaning of that Hebrew word, but I mean, I don't know if it means container. I mean, it's a Noah's ark was basically a giant box. The Ark of the Covenant was, well, a different kind of box, right?
We use vessel.
Vessel? Right?
Vessel can be a ship or a container.
Probably a better word. Vessel. Yeah. Good. All right. Any other names that you can think of? Yeah, Darren.
Somebody already say Ark of God.
The Ark of God? I don't think so. I mean, this is variations on a theme, isn't it? Look at check this one out. 2 Samuel 6 and verse 2. This one's even longer than the one in Joshua 3. 2 Samuel 6 and verse 2. Says, and David arose and went with all the people who were with him to Baal Judah to bring up from there the ark of God, which is called by the name, the very name of the Lord, Yahweh, of hosts, who is enthroned above the cherubim. All of that is descriptive of the ark. Of course, why would he bring up the cherubim? Yeah, there are cherubim on the ends of the mercy seat. Yeah, go ahead.
Psalm 132.
There you go.
A slightly different one. Consider calling it you and the ark of your might.
The ark of your might. My translation says, is that verse 8?
Yes. Verse 8.
The ark of your strength. Also, 2 Chronicles 6, that same expression is used. In my Bible, one says might and one says strength. But the ark of your strength. So that adds something to our understanding of it, right? What was the purpose of the ark? What was it supposed to symbolize? All right? Have we beat that topic to death? The ark, we haven't come up with all of them. That was just a quick perusal of Joshua and some other places in the Bible. The ark of God appears in a lot of places. In fact, what are some of those Bible events? They're just kind of rapid fire. Okay, we got the Joshua stuff, the crossing of the Jordan, right? And there's another event coming up, and the ark's going to play a central part in that. And what's that going to be? The taking of Jericho. Okay? So what are some other events? Of course, its construction is in Exodus 25. How else is the where else does the ark feature have is it featured or has a prominent role? I'm sorry, Danny?
Going into battle,
okay. Joshua 6 being a good example of that.
Philistines knew about it.
The Philistines knew about it. In the book of 1 Samuel, what happened to the ark? It was captured. And they subsequently had all kinds of problems. Dagon, in particular, didn't like it. Were he a real god? Well, there were all kinds of problems. There were tens of thousands of people that died throughout those chapters because the ark wasn't respected. There were some that tried to look into the ark, and many people died. There was problems in moving the ark, not just then, but later on, who orders the ark to be moved. David tries to have the ark moved, and how does that go wrong? Again, they start out, they're moving it on a cart, which, what did God say?
Put the poles through the ring.
Yeah, we'll talk about the poles. They're supposed to carry them with the poles. They didn't. They put it on a cart. And, of course, the cart kind of became unsteady. We remember that Uzzah reached out, quite well-intentioned, I'm sure, paid the price with his life. So what was David's attitude then? I mean, at first he got mad, didn't he? I mean, just raw reaction. It was a very raw reaction at first. But for a while, he was afraid to do anything with the ark. Where did the ark go? Somebody's house. Remember the hyphenated name, Obed-Edom? I think it was there for 20 years or something like that. And Obed-Edom was blessed. Great blessing came. So it's interesting, the attitudes that people... We'll talk about that, hopefully. Some of the problems people ran into with the ark had to do with their attitude toward God, but also their attitude toward the ark itself and what they made out the ark to be in their mind. They had were harboring some wrong ideas about the ark. I would include in that the Israelites at times in their history. Other Bible events. Ark of the Covenant's all over the place. So what about with the setting out of the camp? Okay, there was a whole procedure. The ark had an important place in all of that. How did they prepare the ark to be moved when they're getting ready to set out? You remember who alone? I mean, what was the first thing they did? And it was the priests. Not even the Levites could do this. I didn't give you any heads up on these questions. I know. Okay, whoa. Here first?
You had to pack it up.
You had to pack it up?
Probably was a sacrifice.
I'm
guessing on
this. I don't remember there being one, but there, okay.
They had to wrap it in fabrics, right?
Okay, yeah. They would take the veil, we know about the veil, and the sons of Aaron would take the veil and lay it over the top of the ark. So you know what that says whenever the ark was out being moved around? You couldn't see it. Take that into your understanding of every event in the book of Joshua and the pictures that sometimes, I mean, they're all... That no doubt added to the intrigue and the I think there's a point in that. Everything God did in association with the design of the ark, the instructions about the ark, the moving of the ark, all had a purpose. But they would lay the veil on it, and then after that, I believe, a porpoise skin, and then, if I remember... from my reading, a blue cloth. Okay? What about the poles? Remember any instructions about the poles besides carry them with poles?
They were already in the rings.
Okay. There, in one place, I think in Exodus 25 it says this, you can check me on this, the poles were to remain in permanently. The only exception I can see to that is when the ark was moved. And I think in Numbers chapter 4, it talks about reinserting the poles. Well, the only reason that there would have been for that is as they were covering it up, practically, I don't know, maybe there were slits in the fabric and they would cover the ark and then run the poles back through. I don't know. That's just speculation. But the poles largely were to remain in place permanently. Okay? There are all kinds of details about the ark. There's so much said about this ark. It's fascinating. This ark that goes by how many different names did we come up for? 10 different names at least and counting. Okay, what other Bible events can you think of? So there's a setting out from the camp. So they get the holy objects and then they take the tabernacle down. There was a prescribed order. And then they'd almost kind of reverse the process, wouldn't they? I don't have that passage in front of me. Do your own study on that. But I want to say that they put the ark down and then built the tabernacle around it.
The poles extended out of the...
I know that was true with the temple. We'll come back to that. That the poles were so long that they stuck out. They protruded. And I take that to mean that you could see the indentations of the end. But anyway.
They were outside.
Oh, well, okay. Like you could see them out this way? Maybe.
But
yeah.
It says in 2 Chronicles 8 that they had a covering over the poles.
Oh, okay. A covering, 2 Chronicles 8? A covering that went over the poles? Okay, good. I missed that detail. Like I said, there's so much. What verse is that, Danny?
8.
8.
2 Chronicles 5, 8.
Oh, 5, 8. 2 Chronicles 5, verse 8. Okay, so this is when they bring it into the temple during the time of Solomon. For the cherubim spread their wings over the place of the ark so that the cherubim made a covering over the ark and its poles. There were the extra cherubim that Solomon had fashioned for the most holy place in the temple. This wasn't in the tabernacle. And I believe each wing was 5 cubits in length, the entire width of it was 20 cubits square. And so then each angel was 10 cubits wide, and one wing would touch the wall. And then the two cherubim, their wings would touch in the middle, and then the other wing would touch the other wall. And then presumably the ark's centered underneath it. And so you have the cherubim on the ark, but then you also have the cherubim, these other cherubim overshadowing this mercy seat.
You'll read verse 9, you'll show that I was wrong in it being visible.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking of with the poles. Were so long, the ends of the poles could be seen in front of the inner sanctuary, but they could not be seen outside, and they're there to this day. There's you know, a lot of commentary about exactly what that would have looked like. But you couldn't see the ark, obviously, through the veil, so what would have been the benefit of seeing these, what I would assume are protrusions? What would that be a reminder of? You couldn't see the ark, but
knew it was there.
Now, there is an application for us. I don't know if there's an intended parallel in the text. But sometimes we maybe wonder, God, are you still there? But there are reminders. Anyway, just food for thought. Okay, so there was the setting out from the camp. We've talked about the bringing of the ark into the temple. Of course, the crossing the Jordan, conquering Canaan. In Joshua 8, we're going to read about them renewing the covenant, and they're going to stand in two groups on either side of the Ark of the Covenant, fittingly, in front of one mountain and the other mountain, remember? The Philistines we've talked about, David moving the Ark. The last time that I can see the Ark is mentioned in the chronology is in the time of King Josiah in 2 Chronicles chapter 35. It's one of the facts that Raiders of the Lost Ark gets wrong. They say the ark was likely taken when King Shishak came. Well, that would have been before this time. But the ark is still around in 2 Chronicles 35, so you can study that first couple, three verses there. So, we have the instructions. I mean, the best description of its appearance is obviously in the instructions of how it should be made. Okay? Give me some generalities. What did this thing look like? A box. Yeah. A box. A holy box.
Fancy box.
A fancy box. Overlaid with
gold.
Where? Inside and out.
A holy box.
A holy box. What it was made of acacia wood, the box. The mercy seat was made of pure gold, I believe. Check me on that. The text mentions hammered work, hammered gold. So that would, I mean, some depictions would have this gold with a mirror finish. I don't know that that's how this would have looked. I'm not an expert on metallurgy necessarily or working with metals. Of course, we have the cherubim. It mentions, the text mentions a molding. Our artists just have a field day with trying to conjure up exactly what this all would have looked like. Here are five. Go on any online place where you can find images and have at it. I bring these images up for a reason, but of course all of these, well, the one in the lower left was of interest to me because it showed it covered. I don't see too many depictions of the ark being covered when it's being moved, but if I understand what the text is saying, the ark would have been covered when it crossed the Jordan and when it went around Jericho. Its dimensions, 2.5 cubits. There's some disparity about exactly, I mean, we think of 18 inches, but it may have been as long as 20 inches for a cubit. So you get some rough idea of how big this box was. I mean, I have to look at the math. I can't do it in my head right now. 45 inches, pretty beefy. So some have estimated it may have weighed close to 200 pounds, you think, with all the gold on it and the wood. So how many men were prescribed to carry this? Good. Good answer. No number of men is prescribed. We typically think four. There was a time when the Zadok and Abiathar may have carried it, just the two of them, back. David said, take it back into Jerusalem. I think it was when he had to flee Jerusalem. Other times, you get the impression of maybe 6-8 people. So, back to the point about the poles. The Holy of Holies in the temple had twice the linear length on in any one direction as the tabernacle. I think the tabernacle was 10 by 10. But the poles being so long that they would, I mean, the pole length, by the way, how long were the poles supposed to be? Good answer. There's so much about this we don't know. We know they were long, but we don't know what was specified. Kind of wonder if there weren't poles made by Solomon the second time, because the room was much bigger. But anyway, Danny?
By looking at the pictures, you'd say we didn't know where they were to be placed either.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah. Most pictures you see have the rings, have the poles parallel with the long sides. Okay. Now here are a few things I think we do know. Let's get back into the, let's talk about some of the purpose of the ark. What happened on the Day of Atonement? High priest would come in and would offer, would create a cloud.
In
There'd be incense, and there would be atonement made, remember, with the blood of the bull and the blood of the goat, and there would be the sprinkling of the blood on the front of the mercy seat. So I take that to mean the front edge. Okay? So if God appears between the cherubim, and we know that the cherubim were stationed at the ends of the mercy seat, which I take to mean the short ends, then what was the orientation of the ark behind the veil? Long side facing the priest or short side? Probably long side facing the priest. If God, it wouldn't make any sense to have the angels this way, is when he appears before the mercy seat, have an angel, the back of an angel right there, as opposed to God appearing between the cherubim, makes more sense with what the text says. So they would offer the blood, and then seven times in front of the mercy seat, all as part of making atonement for the people. You had a comment?
Question and answer time.
You can ask a question, have at it. I may not have the answer.
Isn't there a scripture says that we're not to look on graven images?
Not to look on graven images?
Yeah.
I can say this. I'll piggyback off your question.
Okay.
Conveniently not answer your question. I don't know the answer to that. I can say this. Remember what we said a while ago about the priests being the ones to cover the ark? Who carried the ark? It wasn't the priests. The Levites. Exactly right. And when I think in the book of Numbers, you'll find the Levites were not even allowed to look at the holy objects. Another reason why I think the ark was covered when it was out and about. I mean, if the Levites couldn't even look at it, how much less would the people be able to look at it? So the Bible does say that about the holy objects in the tabernacle. Only the sons of Aaron could ever look at them. The Levites could not.
The reason I said that, I knew a Christian once, and he's dead and gone now, so I never was able to ask him the question afterwards.
Interesting.
That's really not
okay.
Serious.
Yeah, I don't know. One other thing about these poles. Nobody really knows which way the poles, I guess this would be the pole position, pun intended. We don't know which were the poles parallel to the short side or to the long side. What did the phrase mercy seat? Just give you some things to think about. What did the expression mercy seat? Why was that expression used? Obviously, because of the principle of mercy. Our God is merciful, and God would show mercy on the Day of Atonement. But it's called seat, mercy seat. I think we read one passage in Joshua 3 that says that he's enthroned above the cherubim. He said, above the mercy seat, I will appear. So there's almost this sense, this in which God is in a sense seated above the mercy seat. Let me see if I can find some of these other passages. It's almost as if the ark is described as a symbolic, even a battle chariot, a symbol of Yahweh war. And I read that was fascinating because that's what we're studying in Joshua, is Yahweh going to war against the nations. But Psalm 132 that someone read.
Exodus 25 tells us where the poles were on.
Well, where did it say? On the sides, yeah. That's the same word, by the way, in Genesis for rib. I think you'll know what text that is. So I almost get the sense based upon the... I've got passages here. If I can give them to you afterwards. We don't have time to read them. But if there's this sense or this picture of God seated, and so he's appearing to What was the purpose of the ark? What were some of the purposes? There, we talked about the Day of Atonement. What else was the ark used for, functionally?
During the Ten Commandments.
Okay, it was the Ark of the Testimony. It carried the tablets, but there is another, something else associated with God's instruction associated with the ark. It had to do with Moses.
He spoke to God in Numbers, and God answered him from the space between the cherubim.
Okay, he would appear to Moses between the cherubim. So we have the ark associated with the giving of God's instruction. We have the tablets inside. We have the language of the testimony. And remember, it says God spoke to Moses face to face. So I know God is a spirit. I understand that. But you wouldn't get the sense at all that God's facing this way. If he's between the cherubim, and okay, so the priest would come before God. So from God's perspective, and then there's the application of the blood before him in his sight, Moses speaking to him. So if you were carrying a king, I'm just throwing this out. If you were carrying a king or a dignitary on poles, what direction would he be facing?
Forward.
So if the poles are along the long sides, as is typically depicted, you'd have God traveling along sideways. Obviously, he can't. Solomon had it right when he said, heaven and the highest heavens cannot contain you, much less this house that I have built. Okay? Just interesting. So that's why I included that picture in the upper left. Maybe it was the case the poles were on the short sides, and then you'd have the cherubim like that. Anyway. Most of the pictures of, we do know, the poles were to be at the bottom. That's where the feet were, and that's where the rings would go for the poles. Anyway, all this is interesting, but let's move on quickly and talk about, broadly, why did God have this holy box made in the first place? What was he trying to do? It features in so many places. What's he trying to accomplish by having this box built?
Well, I think one thing would be is the holiness of God and how he came to look upon it.
Okay. With the covering up of the ark, what would that communicate to people about God?
That they need the priesthood, need to do the sacrifices and everything.
He's not a God to be trifled with. He's holy. He's to be revered. In fact, had some discussion not long ago about Leviticus 10 with someone, and it got me thinking about that text. Go and study that. It's interesting that in that text, I believe the expression, the presence of the Lord, is used. And then maybe later on, it mentions the Ark of the Covenant. And it's almost as if those two expressions may have intended to be interchangeable. You study that for yourself. But let me just ask it this way. Would the presence of the Lord be, is that something associated with the ark? Absolutely. Absolutely. The ark of the covenant of the Lord. It wasn't just flowing words. Those words had significance. They had that significance in the Jordan River. That God goes before you, our holy God, who's so holy, we don't just not look on him, we don't look on his box, right? And I think it was that feature about the box that then gave people some wrong ideas about, it's like they treated the ark like some rabbit's foot or good luck charm, and all we have to do is bring it into our city and we'll have victory, which is the misconception advanced in Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's not what God was trying to, really what God was trying to teach. The holiness of God, the presence of God, the Word of God. What else was the purpose, the Ark for?
Hebrews says that all those things were shadows of the real heavenly role where Jesus is the high priest serving in the real Holy of Holies.
Exactly. So when it talks about him appearing in the presence of God for us, I think that expression, the presence of God, that's something associated with the ark. Okay? Other thoughts? What did it have inside of it? It had the tablets. Hebrews 9 verse 4 says the tablets.
Aaron's rod
that budded, which indicates God's approval. And then the jar of manna, which indicates God's provision. So think about that. God's provision, God's approval, God's word, God's presence. When they set out from camp, Moses talked about go forth, ark, and talked about God scattering his enemies. That has a parallel to the book of Joshua. Okay?
Protection,
absolutely. He goes, well, yeah, you have a lot of those things in the crossing. So he goes before them, he's holy, there's space, and then later Israel passes in front of it. And then Israel, so it's as if they're passing before the presence of God. He watches their path. He prepares their way. Not an idol. People treated idols as a repository for the deity itself. That really wasn't what God was communicating here. It was a teaching tool, be one way of looking at the ark, but not at all to be regarded. And this is kind of the way some regarded the ark, as if it's this good luck charm or whatever. You know, of course, in the movie, you open it up, and there's all this glowing and smoke and whatever. Just you weren't supposed to look in the ark. That much is clear, but the rest of that is just Hollywood. Ark has obviously been lost. My best guess would be it was destroyed when King Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem. He ravaged the temple. He took the treasures, took the gold, and notice Jeremiah chapter 3. Jeremiah chapter 3. Just want to see how this lands for you here. Verse 11 beginning, "And the Lord said to me, faithless Israel has proved herself more righteous than treacherous Judah. Go and proclaim these words toward the north and say, return, faithless Israel, declares the Lord. I will not look upon you in anger, for I am gracious, declares the Lord. I will not be angry forever. Only acknowledge your iniquity, that you transgressed against the Lord your God and have scattered your favors to the strangers under every green tree." They're describing their harlotry. "And you have not obeyed my voice, declares the Lord. Return, O faithless sons, declares the Lord, for I am a master to you, and I will take you one from a city and two from a family, and I will bring you to Zion." Verse 15, "Then I will give you shepherds after my own heart who will feed you on knowledge and understanding. It shall be in those days when you are multiplied and increased in the land, declares the Lord, they will no longer say the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. And it will not come to mind, nor will they remember it, nor will they miss it, nor will it be made again." Jeremiah lived when? Time of the carrying away to Babylon. Josiah lived not too terribly long, relatively speaking, before that. Just another piece of the puzzle. But what's the bottom line? Do we need to find the ark? Steven Spielberg would love it. Let me ask this. This is a meaningful question. Do we need to find the ark to believe in the historicity and authenticity and inspiration of the Bible?
Definitely not.
Do we need to find the ark to have deeper faith? What do we have? Why was the ark so awesome? The Word of God and the presence of God. Has that gone anywhere? No. And God has revealed himself in the person of Jesus Christ. Some will spend their days lusting for things that are elusive, The bottom line really had nothing to do with deeper faith and holy living. God used those for a time. You're right. They were intended to be a shadow, but now we have the substance. That's more of Steven Spielberg can't depict that. It's beyond our ability to put words to. Anyway, side trip. So Sunday, God's victory at Jericho. We get back on the highway and get back to following the path the Israelites are taking as they're going through the land of Canaan. Thank you very much.